Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. I'm calling to you live this week from wonderful Bonita Springs, Florida, as we do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And I have my dear friend and co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady herself from ProfitableStorytelling.com with us today. Rhonda, do I have you unmuted?
Yeah, I unmuted myself. I'm here, Gina.
Gotcha. How are you today?
Oh, I am really great. Had some fun, a little bit of retail therapy with a good friend of mine on Sunday. I found some awesome new jeans to take to JV Alert with me. Ooh, ooh, excited.
Oh, how nice is that?
As always, great. Finding jeans is not easy, so it's great. I found two pairs, so I feel really like it was my lucky day.
Well, you know, this weekend, my friend Ross Goldberg had an event on Sanibel Island here in Florida. And when I heard about it last week, I'm like, what idiot would have an event on Memorial Day weekend? That is just ridiculous. But, you know, he was smart about it. He didn't just have an event on Memorial Day weekend. He brought everybody to the beach. He actually did the event poolside for several of the different things he was doing Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, sweet.
But he got to stay through yesterday and go to the beach and the pool if they were at the event. And it turned out so well. I was like, man, he really planned that. He was really brilliant about that. So I went from thinking, what idiot, to, wow, he was really brilliant. So I
yeah.
spent the weekend at the beach across an event.
Sounds great. Sounds like it would have been really an awesome event. What was he talking about at the event?
Well, it was very different. It wasn't a typical internet marketing event. It was part of a $2,000 product that he sold around Christmas time. So all of the people who were there had paid $2,000 for the right to come to this event. And he had, I think, 9 or 10 speakers, but it was a no-pitch event. You were not allowed to pitch at all. So a combination of SEO, mobile marketing, social media marketing, it was a variety of different things that were designed around getting more traffic to your website.
Awesome. That sounds great. And then we'll be able to see each other at JV Alert this weekend in D.C.
I know, and celebrate my birthday on Sunday.
I know. I'm real excited. I have to leave at 6 a.m. Monday. I says, I don't know if I'll even go to bed or not. I'm not sure. We're celebrating your birthday.
Oh, I think we'll go to bed. Maybe late, but we'll go to bed.
Really late, yeah, because I have to get up really early to get out. But I'm looking forward to celebrating your birthday with you and to rooming with Renee.
Awesome. And I'm looking forward to our show today. We've got a great guest with us.
We sure do. We've got a couple of people, and I'm very excited about this because it's something that's really different and something that you know, the average person would go brand licensing, you know, like all that merchandise stuff. What on earth does that have to do with little old me and my business? So we're going to get a chance to share some of those good things with you. So let me tell you about our guest, Pete Canaliccio, today. Pete Canaliccio, good Italian name. I love it. Getting good company, right? Yeah. With a name like Del Boccio, of course, you know. So anyway, he is an expert in brand licensing, and he's worked with fantastic companies like Coca-Cola and Newell Rubbermaid. So let me read you and tell you some of his experience. So Pete has 20 years of global business experience that he brings to us and our listeners today, Gina. And before he started his company, which is called Licensing Brands Incorporated, in 2009, he was the general manager of CardScan, and he was really doing some great things to rejuvenate their organization. And he began back in 1997 at Coca-Cola in the event licensing group manager. And he had all kinds of different programs, including the Olympic Winter Games in Nagano, Japan, and World Cup Soccer in France, and a major NASCAR events. And back in his second year in that role, he brought the group, get this, to over $50 million in retail sales and earning $3 million in royalty revenue from the company. In 1998, he worked with Diecast Licensing Action Performance. He delivered $30 million in retail sales. I mean, you know, just all kinds of things that he's really been able to do some incredible magic for the companies that he has worked with. Excuse me. And he continued his licensing career at Coca-Cola in 2001, and he was a director for the 2002 Winter Games in Salt Lake City, Utah. So he's done a whole bunch of things with Coca-Cola. There he was directed and he developed all of Coca-Cola's licensing programs, and you know, when you see things like the pins and the hats and all those different things with Coke and the Olympics, that's the kind of stuff that Pete does. So he is really just amazing. And Pete, I'm so happy that you were able to be here and that you're going to also share how this isn't just for big guys like Coca-Cola and Newell Rubbermaid, but how it's for the smaller business owner. And I'm really excited for you to bring that wisdom to us. So welcome to our show, Pete.
Welcome, Pete. Uh-oh, do I have him muted?
Oops, I thought he was unmuted.
Let me try. Is that you, Pete?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
There he is.
We can now. There you are. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, and thank you, Rhonda, for such a terrific introduction. I really appreciate that.
There's so many things that can be said of you, and of course we're going to hear about a new program that you have where you're basically teaching the things that you know to the business owner. So I'm excited to have you here. And Gina Hugh Simpson introduced me to Pete, so I thought you might want to know that. Pete's, Hugh certainly knows you very well, and Pete, you've heard so much about Gina now and from Hugh and from me, so I'm glad you guys could meet.
Well, now I understand better how you guys were able to connect and how we were able to connect with the brand licensing expert. That makes total sense.
Doesn't it? It's
exactly.
All through relationships. There's a shocker. So, Pete, I'm glad that you're here. And since we have the joy of your wisdom with us, tell us, what on earth does this whole idea, what is brand licensing, first of all? And then how can the more average business owner who is not Coca-Cola use brand licensing to grow our business?
I'd love to answer both those questions. First off, I do want to let you know that my colleague Priyanka Kadi is on the call with me, and our other colleague, Bill Jack Zuber, I think is going to be joining in a few minutes. So happy to have them here.
Hi, Priyanka. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, Rhonda. Hi, Gina.
Hi there. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you for inviting us on the show. Really excited.
Excellent.
So I'll jump in and answer what is brand licensing. And, you know, in just really in layman's terms, ladies, brand licensing is where one company who owns a brand, and that's a brand that's highly regarded, so the Coca-Cola's, but also it could be a highly regarded brand in a very narrow segment, but everyone in that segment knows that brand, shares that brand or rents that brand to a manufacturer or a service provider who makes great products in a particular category that the brand should be in but doesn't have the brand. So you got a really symbiotic relationship because one company really does some things really terrific that the brand needs to be doing, but maybe because of resources or just other commitments or whatever reason, they have not thought about, you know, producing product in that particular category. They can then lend their brand, rent their brand, or the formal term is license their brand, in exchange for royalty revenue, which is basically a percentage of the net sales that the company makes, to enable them to be in that category. And, of course, the benefits to the manufacturer are now they have a recognized brand in their specific segment, everyone knows, and that brand can help them open doors and gain new business that they would never have gotten without the brand. And then the brand owner gets to be in a category they know they should be in, and that brand, that category reinforces their promise to the marketplace, you know, what they say they're willing to do or can do. And now you have commerce producing phenomenal products that consumers are getting because of brand licensing that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
So you're talking about leverage. And can you share the example from Newell Rubbermaid with the closets? I think that would really help people kind of understand it a little bit.
Sure. So when I was running the Rubbermaid global licensing business, Rubbermaid knew that it should be in a number of different categories, but it just didn't have the wherewithal to manufacture or source and provide the manpower to be in all those categories. And one of those was in closet organization. They were doing some things in closet organization. They were creating this nice little organizational structure that fit on the wall where you would literally drill holes and then you would affix it to the wall. But there were so many other components of that closet organization that they didn't do, couldn't do, they weren't really feasible from a financial perspective, that they licensed that category of what I'll call the accessories to the closet organization to a third-party company who is in the marketplace today manufacturing over-the-door organizers and shoe racks that stand on the floor or some other organizers that hang on the rod. And this business was significant. I mean, it might have almost doubled the overall size of the business that Rubbermaid had in closet organization because they were able to do some themselves but find a third-party manufacturer who was best in class, who was able to produce that product for them, sell it into all the major channels where Rubbermaid would be expected to be bought. So that's in, you know, the Home Depots and the Lowe's and the Targets and the Walmarts, and giving consumers all of the products that they needed to highly organize their lives, which, you know, Newell Rubbermaid and Rubbermaid specifically, their promise is to help you organize your life. And so this was a critical component that they were able to do through licensing.
What a great example.
I agree, and it's terrific for that company because without the Rubbermaid brand, they're just, you know, they're effectively just an ABC company. I mean, they are terrific at what they do, but nobody knows them, and certainly the consumers don't know them. So they are really pushing water up a hill without a great brand like Rubbermaid, but when they combine their terrific products with the Rubbermaid brand, not only are they well-known by the consumers, but they're well-known by their customers who are the retailers who are looking to buy highly, you know, highly efficient, best-in-class products with great brands like Rubbermaid.
Awesome. Most of our listeners are smaller, newer businesses. Many of them, their only products are informational products. Does that mean that they couldn't benefit from brand licensing because they don't have a physical product like Rubbermaid?
Oh, no. I mean, that's the beauty of brand licensing. It can service and provide an entree to anyone with a great product or, you know, a great brand. And so if they're producing informational products, but maybe their name is not as well known as some of the names that we all know in the marketplace today that we can rely on day in and day out to deliver excellence in what they advocate, then they can use brand licensing to help them. And that could be in the sense of that they're licensing somebody's name who is completely well-known and that product's coming out under their name, or it could be an endorsement. So it's still manufactured by this small company, but they're being endorsed by, you know, a Tony Robbins or somebody that has tremendous clout who says, you know, not only, you know, that they advocate the product and use the product, but the name Tony Robbins is on is on the you know, the physical aspects of the informational product. What do I mean by that? It could be on a DVD, for example, or it could be on a zip drive. But it's effectively leveraging the relationship. And, of course, somebody like Tony Robbins would say, I'm only going to do that with products that I really believe in and those products that really support what I stand for in the marketplace. So it can be done absolutely with informational products just as much as physical products.
Awesome. So, Rhonda, what kinds of things do you want to know about brand licensing today?
Well, so let me, you know, let me just go back to what we were talking about here, Pete. So for somebody who's an entrepreneur or somebody who has a smaller business, now on last week's show, which was May the 24th, 2011, we talked a lot about having this really consistent message and vision for what you're about and being, you know, consistent with that and building a platform around that. So what you're suggesting is kind of a natural follow-up to what we did last week, which is that you have your company's vision, your whether it's an information product, a book, or whatever, and you're finding a company that is bigger, better known, and relevant to the people who would use what you have, and you're forging an alliance. Has I got that right?
Oh, you absolutely have it perfect. In fact, the reason I have to pop off at 12, just before 12:30 today is I've got a client who's got a phenomenal product. It's a car seat cover, easily replaceable car seat cover that you put on your child's car seat because you know there's going to be an occasion where he or she, your child, is going to spill a drink or maybe get sick in the car. Whatever that reason is, you need that, be able to keep that car seat safe by positioned in your car. So if that happens with your child, you can easily take him or her out of the car seat, quickly pop off the car seat cover, quickly pop on another one, strap her or him back in, and never lose a beat and keep everything in perfect condition. Baby's happy, car seat's in a safe place, never was altered. And, of course, that company is not known, but we're helping them get their innovation, their technology. They have a patented technology on this car seat cover. And we're going to go share that with some of the best-in-class brands in the marketplace and see who wants to, partner with them. And that will be a relationship where they actually will be licensing their technology to a great brand. And so here you've got the reverse flow going where the big brand may say, you know what, that's what we need to make our product even better in the marketplace. So we're going to actually pay the inventor or the small business who has technology or innovation for the rights to use that technology in new products that we're going to produce.
You could end up with a bidding war over the right to be the person who licenses that particular technology.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we go after a license like this, we always try to get a couple of really viable candidates interested. First off, because they both may, in fact, want to license the technology, and so you want to be able to get, you know, the maximum royalty rate. But you may also find out that one of them is actually much more well-suited to actually commercialize your product. So they both may love it, but one has, you know, been primed to get it to the marketplace, and the other one may be thinking, oh, I'll get to this in 18 months. Well, by having more than one choice, you not only want to get the best price for it, but you want to get someone out there who's actually going to run with it.
Yeah, right, a waiver
versus
later.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Right.
So you just mentioned the best royalty. Is this expensive? Is this going to cost businesses lots of money to do?
That's a great question. And no, it does. I mean, it does cost something, but I believe at the end of the day, it is almost, in some cases, it's positive. In some cases, it's neutral. If it does cost them, and by means of answering that question, cost, I'll say it's cost and how much gross margin they make, it may be nominal. So what do I mean by that? If you have to pay a best-in-class brand, like a Rubbermaid brand or a Nike brand, let's just say an average of 10%, you know, because those brands are desirable, they can be sold and typically are sold for a premium. They're going to be sold to a customer, like a big company, like a big retailer, like Target, for more than a product without a brand. So you may be able to cover as much or potentially even more than your royalty. If you can't, the chances are you're going to cover most of it. So now, for very little cost out of pocket, you're now, if you're qualified, if you have the capability, you are calling on companies with that brand behind you, and so you have the chance to get calls back, and you have the chance to win business. And you know, in the case of a small company with a significant brand, that could, you know, double, triple, quintuple their business. And, you know, the net result from a royalty revenue perspective and its impact on gross margin can be little to nothing. And they ended up bringing in substantially more revenue than they would have, of course, without it.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, this really reminds me of what a lot of people think I'm an expert in, which is joint ventures. In a way, it's kind of a joint venture, isn't it?
It really is. This is business development. This is partnering, strategic partnerships, joint ventures, exactly what you ladies are doing. And this is just a specific technique that, of course, is very well known in the entertainment industry or, you know, the sports industry, but people are not thinking about it in day-to-day business where brands can extend into products that we know and love. And why they're not, I'm not sure, but that was one of the reasons why I decided to launch my own company and make an emphasis on education, because I thought there's so much to be able to share with great listeners like you have to help them, empower them to, you know, to be successful in ways that they haven't even considered.
And I'm sure our listeners are thinking about this. How do you get compensated?
Great question. The way that we get compensated, if we are the representatives for a particular company, whether it be a brand owner or a manufacturer, we will typically take a retained amount of money before the license is enacted. So that helps us, you know, and it's not significant, but it's enough that it helps us be able to cover all the costs associated with the work that's involved, and we have a detailed eight-step process, and Priyanka and Bill, who I believe is on the phone now, will share with you that process, and this will be part of that information product that we're launching in early July. But that gets us up to speed and helps us find those right partners and negotiate on behalf of our clients and then contract with them and then help manage that program from an orientation and business planning perspective ongoing. And then we take a portion of the revenue. So there is a small investment up front, but then once the program is up and running, it's self-funding because whatever they're making, they would have not gotten anyway. And then we, if we're representing the brand owner, and then we take a portion of that. If it's on the side of the manufacturer, we typically take a small portion of the net sales associated with that particular license. So, again, we're trying to be facilitators and minimize, you know, their investment, but create opportunities that they would never know how to do otherwise. And for those who don't want to contract with us full tilt, then we offer these informational products like we're going to discuss today, or we can do something in the middle, which is coaching, which is saying, hey, you go do it. We'll give you all the tools and resources you need, and we'll also provide you with a dedicated amount of hourly coaching along the process, really keeping you, you know, on track, on speed with work worksheets and, you know, frequently asked questions answered and, you know, a plan to make sure you're successful. So there really is a solution for every one of your customers and your listeners.
Well, you know, we should really talk further off the radio shows. Maybe there's something there that we can work together and get you helping me to do this with Directions University, and I can then in turn get you, all of my students using your service, because I really think this is something that very few online businesses look into. They think they're too small. They think they don't have the right kind of products, and yet it's something that could really, really make their companies grow much, much faster than they could on just using the Internet itself.
That's why I brought him here.
You we would love to help you with that and Rhonda in any way we can. We definitely think there's huge possibilities and potential, and count on us to get in excitedly enthused and jump in with both feet on that.
Well, and clearly the big companies are starting to recognize this themselves. I mean, look at these new machines that Pepsi just started introducing. Have you heard about them? These social machines that buy Pepsis for your friends?
Oh, I've heard a little bit about that. That's exciting. And, you know, who knows if they contracted with that particular company or they licensed their brand. It could have been either way, but even for big companies...
I actually know for a fact that Pepsi licensed Facebook's brand to do this.
There you go. Perfect example. Perfect example. That's so exciting to hear about.
And so now you've got pop dispensers where you can go and put money in and buy your friends a Pepsi, and it then sends them a message on Facebook so that they can get the code to go redeem their Pepsi at their local pop dispenser. I mean, really cool example of brand licensing.
Oh my gosh,
cool.
I love that.
Ladies, I have to jump off, like I mentioned, but Priyanka's here, and I understand Bill is on. He may be muted, but they are more than capable of continuing the conversation.
Well, thanks so much for being here, and I'm looking forward to talking to your partners about this further.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. Have a great afternoon. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye now.
And is that Bill now unmuted?
Yes.
Hello, Ron.
Oh,
hi.
There you go.
Ah, great.
So I am just fascinated by all of this. It certainly makes you think a little bigger.
Yep.
It really does. I think the process of doing brand licensing, when done well, can take almost any size business to the point of 0 to 60 so fast. There are so many talented manufacturers out there that just don't have the brand play that really gets the notice that they can. And they really gloss over the fact that they can actually do a licensing process that will really integrate them and endear them with the consumer. And I think that's what we offer, again, as Pete had said, a number of different levels. So from the kind of the self-help, do-it-yourself kit to coaching sessions to full-on consultation, all within the means and budgets of most businesses out there.
Well, and I think brand licensing could be used by both for-profit and non-profit businesses both equally well. Mm-hmm. So, for example, one of my clients is a project that I'm currently involved in involving 9/11. It's a group that call themselves 911 Remembrance, and their site is 911remembrancelasvegas.org. They are planning a huge celebration, remembrance, type of thing, the 9th, 10th, and 11th of September in Las Vegas. They've gotten the city of Las Vegas involved. They've been able to get permission to close down the Vegas Strip on 9/11 for an enormous parade. They're doing different remembrances each of the 3 days. They're expecting 500,000 people. They're flying survivors in using military planes to fly them from New York to Las Vegas for this event. They've gotten one of the big hotels in Vegas involved to do a $10,000 a plate charity dinner. And all of the funds raised from this event are going to go to either benefit the military people who have been overseas and have now become injured, or to benefit the survivors of 9/11. So it's a couple of really good causes that they plan on raising money for. And one of the things that they've been thinking about is how can we get more exposure? How can we get a bigger reach? How can we tap into companies and people who already have resources, already have audiences to get our message out there? And I would think that brand licensing could work equally well with them, correct?
Absolutely. From the simple process of doing things with shirts to adding things where it's collectibles and keepsakes wonderful licensing extensions.
Yeah. So
Priyanka, you were going to add?
Let's hear from you. You have something to add.
Yeah, pretty much this. That, I mean, the best way to memorialize an event is to create merchandise and have people who've attended that event to take this merchandise back home, and every time they look at it, they're reminded of this event. So it's not only are you able to raise money and increase your exposure, but you're also, you know, memorializing that in the minds of the consumer.
Yeah, really, really good idea and really good point. So before Pete left, he said you have an 8-step process that someone would go through in order to do that. Let's use the example of 911 Remembrance, the project I need to do this with. Walk us through what that 8-step process would look like for them.
Okay. Bill, should I take this one?
Sure.
So our 8-step process really starts with, determining where to place. So if you've got a brand like 911 Remembrance, you want to figure out what different categories can you put this brand on, you know, what makes sense for this brand. So in this case, it could be like the set collectibles or apparel or, anything that would commemorate this 911 event. So you figured out what those product categories are. The second step in the process is identifying how to win. So how do you go about putting your brand on these categories? Should you be manufacturing these categories yourself? If you've got the resources and the know-how to do it, sure, go ahead and do it yourself. Second option is to either outsource the manufacturing to someone else. The third option is to, acquire a company who would manufacture apparel or collectibles. And for the most part, that doesn't make financial sense. And the fourth option is licensing, where you really lend your brand name out there to a company who can manufacture and market on your behalf. So once you've determined that you want to do this through licensing, the third step in the process is to identify the right partners who can help you, the right manufacturers who can help you, get these products to market. So you go about scouting, different trade directories. You go to trade shows to figure out who are these manufacturers of apparel or collectible items that you can partner with. The fourth step is really conducting due diligence on them, so figuring out, are these partners really the best fit for you? Do they have the financial capability to do this? Do they have the reach in the marketplace to be able to sell effectively or not? So once you've done that and you've shortlisted your list of manufacturers, you really, go down to defining the opportunity. So that's step 5. So you figure out, how much can I sell in 3 years? What will the product look like? What are the forecasts and things like that? Once you've done that, you use this to really build on a contract and then negotiate the contract with these manufacturers. So that's step 7. Once you've signed a contract with one or potentially two licensees, I'm calling these manufacturers licensees, you want to make sure that whoever you've signed on is set up for success, that they're on board, they understand your brand, what the brand's attributes are, and they design the product in such a way that your brand's attributes are part of the product. So you want to orient them, you want to tell them what the entire approval process is, just to make sure that your brand is not compromised at any point. So that's step 7. And then the final step is business planning. So really, working with them on the entire timeline of how and when they want to commercialize, what retailers they're going to go into, what are the line review dates, are they on track for everything, have they got their testing done so that, to make sure that say if it's apparel, to make sure it's got a flammability test or a shrinkage test and things like that. So that's really your final step where you're working with them on the business planning.
Wow, I could barely take notes. You were talking so fast.
I had to stop trying.
Yeah, I think to just kind of recap what Priyanka said, that's a lot of different things. But if you think about step 1, identify where to play. Step 2, determine how to win. Step 3, prospect the licensees. Step 4, due diligence. Step 5, define those licensing opportunities. Step 6 is to negotiate those deal terms. Step 7 is to, again, sign the deal contract. And step 8 is to build the plan into a business process or business plan out of it. And that becomes an ongoing and renewing business.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. And it's they're each of those, and if you lay that out on a timeline, I mean, quite frankly, that can take anywhere as short as a 6-month period for your before you're actually into a business planning process, as long as 18 months when you're involving things like food production or actually creating products that would be inside a number of distributed chains of business, either in the U.S. or across the global front.
If we're doing this in September with 911 remembrancelasvegas.org, is it likely that we could get things set up that quickly?
It is for a certain number of products, and you'd have to look again. Some of the businesses that are a little quicker turn, and that's really about prospecting. Certain licensees have the ability to sign license and move and produce goods fairly quickly. Whereas if you were thinking about a take-home collectible that might be produced out in China or something like that, producing it that fast, there could be some distribution problems. So that could take out a number of kind of categories and products that you're just going to say, well, we can't get a license agreement signed quick enough to get product in the country by the time that that might happen. Again, a case by case, we'd have to look at it, but those are definitely considerations to think about is an in-place market timing about what kind of licenses, what kind of categories to consider when you're licensing.
Gotcha. Well, clearly I should get with you guys sometime in the next week or so, since time is going to be limited on this project, to talk more about using brand licensing.
And as Pete said, we'd be happy to work with you on that and other projects.
Awesome. Okay, Rhonda, why don't we make sure we tell our listeners how they can find Pete and his team and get their help on brand licensing?
Their website, and it is in the show notes as well, just so in case you're driving or whatever, it is brandlicensingexpert.com. And you'll be able to connect with Pete and his fabulous team. And, Bill, you have some experience with Cinnabon, which is certainly a favorite haunt of mine when I had access to them.
Sure, brand licensing in food, and that's kind of a new and I think rapidly expanding. If the listeners are really seeing and liking restaurant brands out there, I'd say good 90%, if not all, product that you see out there has been done from restaurant grade through some licensing. So when I'm speaking of that, that's out in the grocery stores and the club stores, the Costco's and the Walmart's of the world. Where there's a, you know, as you said, a great kind of idea around, I love a Cinnabon, but gee, I wish I could go buy it, buy the flavor somewhere outside of a mall or an airport because it's not convenient for me. And that's been the foray of a lot of brands out there, P.F. Chang's, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, all those brands looking and growing that business. And it's growing quite rapidly, actually.
Yeah, it's amazing in the last couple of years how many restaurants are now doing those kinds of things. It's growing, like, really quick.
Yes, it is. It definitely is.
And really, from a manufacturer standpoint, it's easier to have a started-up brand than it is to go and create your own product with very little consumer knowledge. So from a manufacturer standpoint, it's a win-win scenario. They're taking a product that they're able to produce or a variety that they're able to produce and put a leading brand name with it, which consumers have built up trust, confidence, and expectation. And that's part of that whole testing process that Pete spoke of and Priyanka spoke of. But to be able to do those things and build that together becomes a very then rapid fire of introduction to market and good sales results in marketplace once it's in and on the stores for consumers to purchase.
You guys have a product coming out soon, an information product, and I'd like for you to talk some more about that and share that with people because this is going to be a way for our listeners to find out more and learn how to do this for yourself.
Right. We have this information pack, 6-part webinar series, which we are calling How to Build Your Brand Licensing Dynasty. So it really is, you know, the 6 different webinars go through what is brand licensing, what are the benefits, what are the pitfalls, you know, how you should go about taking advantage of this. So this is very relevant to brands, to manufacturers, and to service providers. And it really, the first webinar of the six-part series is really an introduction to brand licensing and, you know, just what the eight-step process is, high level, and then, you know, what some of the benefits and pitfalls are. And then the other five parts dig deeper into each of the eight different steps and really tell you and give you the tools on how to go about either licensing your brand if you're a brand owner or licensing in a brand if you're a manufacturer. And, you know, we've got a website set up for this called brandlicensingprelaunch.com. That's brandlicensingprelaunch.com. That's all set to go live on June 7th. You know, we're offering this product for $995, and of course we're going to have some attractive incentives for those early birds out there. So, you know, always encourage people to come in and ask us any questions. We planned a month-long launch for this, so between June 7th to July 7th, wherein, you know, we'll be telling you a little bit as to what's part of this product every day, you know, and if you have any questions, please let us know and we'll answer them. And, of course, you know, we're looking for enthusiastic affiliate partners to help us spread the word around and, you know, get this in the hands of as many people, because I think a lot of people can really benefit from this.
Excellent.
Well, we would be happy to help you. Rhonda and I both have access to loads of people who sell products on the Internet, especially, who could all become potential affiliates for you. So it's for us,
excellent.
It's a matter of figuring out what type of audience you really want to get in front of. Clearly businesses, but any particular kind of business, and that can help us find the better affiliates for you. But we'd be happy to help in any way that we can.
Right. I mean, you know, like I said, any brands or any manufacturers who are really looking to get to the next level, you know, they've sort of established themselves and really want to see an expansion in their sales, and then a brand could help them do that. They would be ideal for this kind of thing. And when I say manufacturer, it could be an actual manufacturer or a service provider.
I should definitely introduce you guys to one of my friends. Is a guy by the name of Mike Gorey. He and his partner have a piece of software that they've created that bigger companies can use to evaluate their online presence. It's a really cool piece of software. And it provides very detailed reports that really show them, more than anything, how their brand is doing online. Well, he works with companies like Pepsi, usually a lot of big companies, but also a lot of smaller companies who are trying to compete with the big guys. His client list would be really perfect for what you guys are doing. So I will definitely get you guys in touch with Mike Gorey from North Page. I think it's called North Page Research, because that could be a really good relationship. Lots of things could come out of that for both of you, I think.
Yeah.
Sure, looking forward to it.
But Rhonda and I will definitely put our thinking caps on and see who else we know that we can send your way to help you get word out about the new product.
Absolutely.
I think from a standpoint of both, you know, the folks that are in the business right now and not actively brand licensing, who are just considering it, the product really offers a good kind of primer and a good kind of background for somebody that could get a chance to really kind of review what might or might not be a good advantage to do that. And then for those that are in the business of brand licensing already, that, you know, are wondering how can we increase the revenue flows or how can we increase the control. We offer some really good tips and pointers and kind of focus points for them to be thinking. So it's a pretty broad but yet very focused seminar that can really help folks out.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And, you know, so often, especially our clients, for Rhonda and I both, they tend to think small. They don't think big enough. And this is really a one way that they can think much bigger than they normally do that could really be effective for them quickly.
Right.
You know,
right.
your main business is informational. So you're selling e-books, you're selling seminar seats or workshop seats and that kind of thing. I've had an outline for a plan that I want to implement sometime in the next 3 to 5 years that could involve working with Starbucks in many different ways. It's
mm-hmm.
just a matter of taking the informational things that I already do and do them in a slightly different way that could really allow me to tap into resources that Starbucks have to be able to do this in a bigger way. It really could be done in a lot of different ways involving joint ventures or even brand licensing. So
right.
getting our people to think bigger would be a really good thing to do with the info product that you guys are coming out with.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, and just as another example, I've talked with Pete a number of times and with Priyanka as well. And we're talking about the book that I have called The Peace, for example, in creating using this brand licensing idea and having things that will remind people of peace and help bring peace. And so it's really going to be a lot of fun, a case study for that with, you know, with staff. So I'm pretty excited about that. What you're doing with Starbucks is great. In the whole thinking bigger, anybody who has been trained, Gina, in your program to do joint ventures, it already sort of has this mindset leverage that you consider the brand licensing.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Bill.
I was going to say, and from just, you know, for people to kind of put it into scale, you know, a joint venture is almost a step further down the line than a brand licensing arrangement. Brand licensing still keeps the two entities a bit segregated for the ones that are smaller, larger, or different geographies that separate. A brand licensing agreements allow that still a degree of separation. But all of the benefits and whatnot from a joint venture tend to come out through the right and crafted right brand licensing agreements. So knowing on the continuum between acquiring a business to a joint venture to brand licensing, well-suited businesses can find the right level of business partnerships that deliver win-win for everybody.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that I teach is that it's always a matter of building relationships. And you can't go from a blind date level in a relationship to getting married in the same meeting. It just doesn't work that way. It doesn't work in the real world. It doesn't work in the business world either. And I think
that's the same thing.
Brand licensing might be a good way to go out on a blind date with a company that could then allow the relationship to grow into a full-out joint venture later on, but it's not where you start.
Yep, very true. There's a number of brand licensing arrangements have evolved from a beginning of just a promotional manufacturer of goods to a brand licensing to a joint venture to a actual partnership and buyout. And those things have happened in the beverage world. In the food production world, they've happened on a number of different goods manufacturers across both the U.S. and globally.
Yep,
right.
Exactly.
And just, you know, to add to that, Bill, you talked about the timeline a little earlier, and, you know, a lot of people get baffled when we tell them, you know, it can take up to 18 months. And really the reason is, you know, one, to make sure, of course, that you know you're in the right categories. And then the second thing is to find the right partner, you know. You want to have a long-term relationship. So it's not just about numbers. There's also, you know, other intangibles that come along with it. And you just want to make sure that whoever you're partnering with is the right fit for you.
Exactly. Yeah, and even figuring out who that might be is something that people should really think about.
Yeah.
So let's talk
something
about
really cut and dry.
How do you figure
and
out
when you're talking,
how to do that? Sorry, go ahead, Rhonda.
Yeah. No, I was saying when you're talking about anything that has to be produced that's a physical manufacturing type of thing. In the online world, people who do business primarily online are used to going to places that can just get whatever. But when you're dealing with bringing your information in line with of manufacturing, you've got to think the timeline is going to be a little bit slower.
Exactly. And one of the other things is who the right people are. How do you figure that out?
So when you're helping people figure out who are the right people, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Right.
I think the biggest way to prospect those licensees is looking across the segments. Once you've decided these categories are the ones that we're going to be, or our process is set up, once we've decided these are the categories of business, it's really doing the homework, going out with the knowledge and finding out. You have to pay for some data sources, you have to open market data sources on some, but really looking at who are the manufacturers in given categories, and who's making product, who makes great product in adjunct categories that might have the capability to expand. There's a number of manufacturers out there that have some wonderful expandable manufacturing capabilities, and those are kind of the ones that tend to be a little bit more open to a licensing process versus the ones that are at capacity and are basically strapped for what they're currently producing. And those are kind of ones that aren't as good of a licensee, if you will, in the process. And the flip of a licensor, I'm a great brand, I'm building everything I can, I can't make any more at my particular facility, I might go find an adjunct manufacturer that fulfills the need and looks, has the ability. It requires going out to that site physically to look at their manufacturing, to make some adjustments, to make some ability, the ability of those people, again, you said earlier, the relationship. Are they willing to work with you to adapt a process if you need to have a bent surface versus a flat surface, and they may have to buy some tooling to get there? Are they willing to do that for a purpose of a physical good? If it's something where they're taking in an intellectual percent, do they follow the guidelines or the brand, the guidebook that you've outlined? Do they honor the brand, kind of the architecture of what the brand stands for? As Pete had said earlier, Newell Rubbermaid, those that can bring that into the actual elements of the design of the product tend to be the best licensees out there. There's others that are unable to do that, and those are the ones that you, again, may start a relationship and never gets much further because of the inability and flexibility from a partnership portfolio to do.
Interesting. Really good things to look at. Brenda, why don't we tell them one more time where they can find Pete and his team?
You can find his blog at licensingexpert.com. And then the pre-launch, Priyanka, what is that pre-launch site again? I will put that in the show notes as well. Is that Brand Licensing Pre-Launch?
That's right. It's brandlicensingprelaunch.com.
Great. I will put that in the show notes, brandlicensingprelaunch.com. Out about the launch, and if you are or know of great affiliate partners, then perfect.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you. And so we have a couple more minutes here, so let's kind of do a recap, Rhonda.
So, in just kind of recapping, this whole idea of brand licensing, all about leverage, all about taking two great products or brands and them together in a way that both companies and as well as all of the consumers who are going to those products. It can be done with physical goods, of course, such as seen with Coca-Cola merchandise at Sticks, or with being able to buy TGI Fridays in the grocery store and that kind of thing. And it can also work just as well with information products. Not about what kind of product it is as much as that's what we've been talking about, is bringing leverage and thinking bigger so that you can grow your business quickly with less effort by leveraging the power of a company that already is serving the same type of audience you need to reach. So you can find Pete Conalicchio, and I'm sorry, go ahead, Bill.
No, that was Gina. Go ahead.
You can find Pete and his partners at brandlicensingexpert.com. They have some articles and things there. You can find out about the pre-launch of their series at brandlicensingprelaunch.com, where you can sign up to be notified.
Fantastic. So anything else that Bill or Bianca would like to add for today?
I just thank you for your all's time today. I think it's wonderful to be thinking about business bigger, and I think from the standpoint of a brand licensing, it's a wonderful way to use partnerships and to become better at business relationships. It fits in the series of ideas of, are you a partner, are you a licensor, licensee, or are you a joint venture, and all those kind of things to start to fit in that line continuum. And we look forward to launching our product, and hopefully some of your listeners will be able to take part in that and or use some of our other services. So we appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And Rhonda and I will be back next Tuesday here at noon Eastern on Blog Talk Radio for another episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. Rhonda, who do we have up next week?
Next week we're going to do some follow-up things about participating in live events. So that's what we've got going. It should be a lot of fun. We're going to have more than one person next week.
Oh, that should be awesome, especially wrapping up from JV Alert at that point. So that should be really good.
Absolutely.
So we will see you all back here next week, same time, same place. Until then, have a fantastic week, everybody.
Take care. Thanks for being here.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Join us at Directions University, www.directionsu.com, for passion-powered results.